they slate when the councils meet, when the city councils meet, when the supervisors meet, and so forth. But about 50% of the time, they are inaccurate. So it's it does you well to call up the body in question to find out if they're meeting. There's no meeting tomorrow because today is a holiday. But there will be a meeting next Tuesday. The supervisors customarily meet all day on Tuesday, every Tuesday, and that's on the fifth floor of the county building. And as I said before, if you wish to give your opinion to the supervisors on this issue, you can give a call to 454-2200. Now, it wasn't really the supervisors and the curfew that had me getting you in the studio today, Ed. As you know, you've been very patient with us taking your time. It's actually the case of a man whose name and phone number are up on the wall as an emergency phone here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're talking about Robbie Berlin. And Robbie apparently is a client of yours. We've talked about him in the past. You're defending Robbie in court tomorrow. And what has that criminal done?
Oh, this vicious criminal has cultivated 58 marijuana plants for his own medical use and for the medical use of others. And that's the basis of our defense. When we go into court tomorrow, we're not entering any plea. We're saying, no, the law is wrong. And Mr. Berlin is doing rendering a great public service here and should not be considered to be a criminal. So we need your support to help convince the powers that be that that this is true. And so if anybody is interested, there's going to be a rally at 8 a.m. tomorrow. The actual time to begin the trial will be 2 p.m. because the court set it back for other various reasons. We're going to start picking the jury at 2 p.m. though. But there is this rally at 8 a.m.
The steps of the county building?
Yes. Tuesday morning.
It's at 701 Ocean Street, I believe. For those of you who've never been down there, it's right at Ocean Street before you cross the bridge into downtown Santa Cruz on your left as you drive into town. And it's such rallies are often very interesting. You meet interesting people there. It's frolicsome. I wouldn't dare to suggest you bring your own joint, but who knows, some Scott laws may and have in the past. There's also often been a division in the medical marijuana and the marijuana movement between those who want the herb freed for all purposes and those who want to sort of start this on a slower, lower plateau and free it for the medical purposes. Do you think you had support from both groups in this situation, Ed?
Actually, I wasn't listening to you. I was reading.
Get out!
What are the other groups?
There's a group pushing for medical marijuana. Actually, this is replicated in terms of the two initiatives that are going around the state now. And then there's a group that wants to see marijuana decriminalized for all purposes, in terms of recreational use as well as medical.
Yeah, I assume they'll both be supportive, sure. Why wouldn't they be?
Indeed. So much for that question. How long do you expect the trial to take, and have you done any research about similar trials in Santa Cruz? Has there been a full-scale jury trial in the last decade around this issue?
Not that I'm aware of. In fact, I don't think there's ever been any precedent whatsoever about the issue of cultivation for medical use of others besides the cultivator himself or herself. So that will set a precedent if it gets if we prevail or if we lose and there's an appeal.
Now you're fighting a state law in this case or a federal law?
State.
And the state law prescribes what kind of penalties for Robbie should he be found guilty?
Oh, up to 3 years in state prison for cultivating. There's also other felony charges: possession for sale and possession of psilocybin.
Psilocybin, for our listeners' point of view, is sort of comes from a mushroom.
Right. He had one or two mushrooms in his refrigerator.
So he was, again, engaged in criminal mushroom storage.
Right.
Who's the judge who's going to be hearing this whole business?
Judge William Kelsey.
And does Kelsey have a record of toughness on criminals? Or?
I wouldn't say that, not at all. In fact, I attended the hearing recently for the city planner, Peter Katzelberger, and his wife, where they found 20 marijuana plants growing in their backyard, 19 of which were female plants.
That is to say, plants with lots of nice num-nums on them?
Exactly. And Judge Kelsey did everything he could to help
Mr. and Mrs. Catsleberry.
If you're a fellow bureaucrat, then...
Well, help them avoid any criminal penalties whatsoever. He permitted them to go on diversion, which means that as long as they're willing to attend a few anti-drug classes, that they will have their charges completely dismissed without even the necessity of entering any plea at all. And yet, here we have Robbie Braylon, who they propose now to send to state prison for doing the very same thing. He had a few more plants. The law is very unevenly applied. I was reading an article over the weekend out of the Atlantic magazine from last year, indicating that there are probably 100 or over 100 people in this country in prison for life on marijuana charges of various levels.
And that was last year. It was probably what? The number has probably grown since then.
Yeah. The hysteria continues, and we're going to have to break this hysteria. We're going to have to break the entire war on drugs as a very foul, useless, and counterproductive social policy. And that's why I'm running. That's one of the reasons why I'm running for Congress, is to do just that, is to bring a halt to the war on drugs. It's terrible social policy. So,
what are our prospects? I remember talking with you about this issue three or four years ago. Libertarian Party activists were concerned about the war on drugs. They were holding meetings, and I guess dissident Republicans were also talking about fighting the war on drugs. And Loudon Nelson Center, we were talking about this issue. There's been, of course, throughout the years, a cadre of individuals really informed and active and broadcasting the abuses of the drug war, and indeed the fundamental unfairness, stupidity, and counterproductive nature of that criminal-producing nature of the drug war. And yet, are we any further now than we were 5 years ago?
Well,
in fighting that war, fighting that prohibition.
I think we are, but it's not a matter of that people are too much aware of. But individually, the citizens of this country over the past 10 years have really become ahead of the curve, ahead of the politicians anyway, in coming to the realization that it is a foul social policy and that we have to change it. And I think that the elected officials in this country are going to be very surprised to see the reaction of the voters if and when we can put the issue before them. Just the way they were surprised in 1992 in this county when 77% of the voters favored medical marijuana.
What are the chances of getting that issue on the ballot? I know I have an interview, which I guess I haven't played, with Scott Emler, who is a local medical marijuana activist who has also recently been working in Los Angeles around this issue. You need hundreds of thousands of signatures, and I think you need them by April to get this thing on the ballot, right?
They need something like 600,000.
So 600,000 valid signatures means about 800,000 or 900,000 total, to be sure you don't have problems.
So it's a massive problem, but they're working on it, and I think they're going to get it, because the people are very enthusiastic about it.
Jury nullification is a concept that has been reappearing in the media and has been of long-standing interest to me. The right of the jury to say no thank you to the judge, the DA, and the law if it feels that justice is being badly served in any particular case. The drug war seemed to me to be an ideal place for this concept to come into the fore. Do you anticipate asking the jury, in essence, to nullify the law through one means or another in this jury trial of Robbie Braylon? It will begin tomorrow at 2 o'clock in Judge Kelsey's court.
Well, I think that the issues that are presented to the jury in this case feed right into jury nullification, because since we're pleading the defense of necessity, the jury is going to be asked to balance the evil that was created by his commission of this horrible crime over and against the harm that he is avoiding by supplying himself and others with medicine. There's a balancing process here, so we don't really have to go into jury nullification. The jury is going to be presented with the question, which is worse?
I know that in the past it's been difficult to get necessity defenses before either a judge or a jury. I think there are six criteria that have to be met. Do you think those criteria have been met? Are you fairly confident that Judge Kelsey will allow at least arguments? Will he allow a necessity defense at the trial in terms of getting it before the jury?
Well, I think he will, because we have some pretty solid evidence. We have a nationally recognized author, Chris Conrad, who is probably the most astute scholar on the whole issue of the drug war and particularly marijuana, coming to testify. The six criteria that we'll have to establish, number one, that the act charged as criminal was done to prevent a significant and imminent evil, namely a threat to bodily harm or and so on to oneself or another person. Number two, that there was no reasonable legal alternative to the commission of the act, and our position is that there are no good alternative medicines available to a large number of people.
Do you have medical testimony to that effect coming
up? Yes, we'll have Scott Hager there, for example. Scott is a paraplegic who takes marijuana as his medicine. In fact, we have a case on his behalf in front of the Court of Appeals right now for an injunction, a statewide injunction against all law enforcement, because Scott needs it for his medicine very, very desperately. If he doesn't get his marijuana, he can go into spasms that can actually threaten his life. So,
any doctors coming in to testify about the need for medical marijuana? I'd be interested to see if any doctors are willing to put their credentials on the line on this issue.
Well, Todd, we were not able to arrange with Todd Mercuria for this case because he has several serious conflicts in his schedule, but we're still working on that, and we're hoping to get a local MD.
Speaking of which, and I did want you to continue with this list of the necessity defense requirements, how long do you expect the case to take in terms of trial? Any estimates on the number of days?
Probably four trial days. Maybe go Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday this week, and Monday of next week, possibly.
Okay.
Number three, the harm caused by the act was not disproportionate to the harm that was avoided. Number four, the defendant entertained a good faith belief that his act was necessary to prevent the greater harm. Number five, such belief was objectively reasonable under all the circumstances. And number six, the defendant did not substantially contribute to the creation of the emergency. So those are the six criteria, and we think we can meet all six of them. As I said, we're going to have Chris Conrad coming in to testify. Chris is going to discuss the conditions of the market, how it is that a disabled person has to go about obtaining his or her medical marijuana. And along those lines, I might add that if you do need medical marijuana, there is an outlet here in town where it is available. I can give you the number there. It's 429-8819.
We should call the DA and have him prosecute you for giving out that information.
Well, I would hope that he would try. It would be fun to test that in court.
Do you have time for me to query you more on this? How's your schedule?
Not really. I've got to go to a meeting about the methyl bromide issue down in Aptos.
By the way, recently appeared in the paper this morning. The issue. I want to go and do a very brief mention of that issue, which has to do with, I guess, Representative Farr and your own concerns about the issue of pesticides.
Well, I didn't see the newspaper article. What did that say?
Something about methyl bromide being okayed for a while. Why don't you conclude what you were saying about marijuana, and I'll kind of scrounge for the article.
All right. Yeah, Chris Conrad will be testifying about the conditions of the market, how it is you have to go about obtaining it. It's a very dangerous thing, especially for a sick person, to go out on the street and try to obtain medicinal marijuana. We'll cover the fact that the state legislature in California and in many, many other jurisdictions have passed laws over and over again favoring the use of medical marijuana. Senate Joint Resolution 8 in 1993 declared that the federal government is playing politics with the health of the people in this country who need medical marijuana. A very strong statement. They also passed actual statutes in 94 and 95. Both times, of course, our beloved Governor Wilson vetoed those bills, taking his usual posture of being tough on crime. So we're going to cover all the issues in Robbie's case, and we think it's a real important case, and we hope that everybody will come out to the trial. As I said, it will begin actually at 2 o'clock on Tuesday, but there is the rally at 8 a.m. Tuesday morning in front of the courthouse, and we hope to have as many supporters at that rally as well as at the trial as possible.
Yeah, I would encourage people to come. I may myself be hanging around the courtroom with a tape recorder trying to get some kind of a record of the proceedings. Had I time, of course, I would query you about the fact that the necessity defense is usually used in cases where, oh, I don't know, you trespass over a piece of property in order to save a child from a burning building or some such thing. And actually, I imagine much harder to show in cases where there's sort of a longer period of time was involved and there was no apparent emergency and that sort of thing.
Yeah, but we have patients who are going to be coming in, Scott Hager is one of them, who will testify that if he finds himself without his medicine, he could die. And that is an emergency. And Robbie Bolin supplies people with medicine, people like this, like Scott Hager and others, who need it as a matter of life and death. So,
won't you then have to present a lot of evidence that the only thing that he does with that marijuana is supply people, plus very elaborate pieces of evidence showing that was to whom he supplies it under, what kind of a schedule, and were they getting it somewhere else at the time? And, you know, I mean, it certainly wasn't a question of Robbie running out, grabbing some marijuana from the field, and rushing to give it to Scott. It was somewhere down the line he'd be getting that kind of marijuana, right?
Right, and that's
going to... alternate sources, too. You mentioned one on the phone right now today.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure, but there are others who don't know about the source or who can't get to the source or for whatever reasons, and Robbie, you know, supplies them. Now, his testimony will be, of course, that he does supply them, and that it'll be up to the people, that is, the prosecutor, to prove that what he's saying is false. We're going to have a big battle royal, and we hope that everybody will be there. I have to run.
Look, all right.
And I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it.
And talk more about methylbromide next time.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thanks, Robert.
Sure. That's attorney and community activist Ed Fry here. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Call into the studio if you'd like, 427-3772 or 427-FRSC. Our lines are open, our phone is working, and our studio is bare except for me, and I sure hope you can liven things up, because with Ed gone, all is silence. But not for long, because I have come equipped. Whoop. I've come equipped with tapes, but I've also got a phone that's ringing.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yes, good morning. My name is Robbie Bolin, actually.
Oh, you're the man in question.
Turn that down a little bit. Yes, that's me. One point I wanted to make out that I didn't hear Ed speak about, and that was the fact that I myself have a 6-year medical history of being in severe pain, which was also part of the set of circumstances to led me into the situation that I was in. Mm-hmm. And so I think that adds another element to the whole case.
You yourself have been using medical marijuana to treat yourself for the last 5 or 6 years?
Yes, this is true. Well, actually, the first couple years of the illness, I wasn't sure what it was, and I had been sustaining from marijuana for some time, and it took a little time for me to open back up to it again and to actually recognize, you know, the medicinal effect that it did have on my condition. And then from then I definitely started to explore it, and then I started making contact with other people in similar situations, and one thing led to the next. It's very unfortunate. You know, a lot of times people like myself who are in a position where they're forced into being illegal, actually people with the pains like I have, and people who are naturally through some kind of genetic thing within themselves or past life experience or whatever, gravitate toward marijuana. marijuana, for me, I'm a grower. I can't deny that. I got a gift. And if you read the literature, you find that it is an ancient art. It comes from way back in our past. And for some reason, it comes through. And for me to be in a medical environment and need the way that I was, and other people in my life to be in that same situation, and me to deny that, especially after I know the truth of it, I know where the government has been with the marijuana and where they have come to today. I can't deny. I know the history. I know it was a legal tender in the United States. I know that the government forced farmers to grow it. I know that the government right now has a $40-50 million a year making, since the government and the pharmaceutical company have a 40-50, it's probably more like $70-80 million a year business creating synthetic THC.
Which is not as good for many as straight marijuana.
Right? No, I would say not. I haven't personally tried it, but the whole process that it goes through is very expensive. It's also patented. They would prefer that people buy that at such an expensive rate.
And very few people have access to that, as I understand it.
Say again?
Very few people.
Yes, very few people. Yes, I don't know anybody personally, but I know it's a $40-60 million a year business. Also, laws are being passed right now. You were talking about the medical initiative versus the full-on decriminalization. Well, there are laws being passed right now that will give the pharmaceutical company the right to bottle up this medical movement at some point. This is my belief. And so they're trying to create a little freedom in allowing the medical argument to rise above, but I think we have to be careful for that, because they could just snatch it up at any point and take complete control away from everyone.
Now, are you in touch with other victims of the drug war, either in jail or out of jail?
Oh, most definitely in jail and out of jail. And since this, I've been, you know, let's face it, I was sick, I was growing marijuana, it wasn't like, I knew what's going on, it wasn't like I was standing up front saying, hey, look at me. Now I'm in that position, I have no choice, I have to stand up and I have to speak the truth and I have to be honest. But yes, there are many people out there, and it's not a war on drugs, it's a war on people using marijuana. You know, it's war on the people. That's another thing I don't like. Every time I hear the war on drugs, it's like some kind of joke, you know.
Yeah.
Because how do you fight a drug? You're fighting the people, and that's what they're doing. And yes, I know many people who are sick, many people who are ill, many people who are in pain. And myself, since this has happened, I've, you know, been taken from my supply meds, and I have gone many days without it. Had to go back into the medical system where they'll give you the pills and the medication and all that you want, but this stuff doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're going to trial, and we hope that they let us in. I think...
How can people support you in terms of, let's say, those who can't get to the trial tomorrow? Can they contact you by phone? Can they
get,
contribute to your defense fund?
Yes, they could do that. We have a marijuana defense fund that is... blooming out of all of this, and it probably won't help us a lot on this trial, although it might. And after this trial, definitely I plan to push this fund, especially if I'm acquitted or if I'm not convicted. I plan to go back to doing what I was doing and helping other people in the same situation, because when I recognize in jail, the 4 days that I spent in jail, first off, I was in jail for using an herb that I actually need for my own health, my own comfort of life, my own... I mean, when you're in severe pain 24 hours a day for year after year after year, you are the only one who really knows what's best for you. I am the only one. No doctor's been able to help me, really.
I think that's a really good point, that we turn often to experts, but experts ultimately have to give way not merely to the choice of the individual who is seeking the expert testimony, but also to the judgment of that individual, because you have to make that decision.
Yes, heal thyself. You know, like my condition, I spent 4, 5, 6 years in and out of the medical institution trying to find out what is wrong with me. And that in itself is a terrible position to be in, because a person like myself, vegetarian, into natural kind of living, you know, you don't want to go into the hospital and have them prodding you with this and injecting radiation in your veins and taking x-rays and all this stuff.
What was the diagnosis of your condition, Robbie?
Well, basically, a diagnosis is very unclear within the medical environment itself, the mainstream medical hospital doctor type thing. The diagnosis is very vague and unclear, almost non-committal to the point, because it's not something that's just showing up very...
Did they think you were malingering? Or?
Well, there is that attitude in certain circles that I go in, yes.
How would you describe your condition?
It in a nutshell. I was born with a birth defect in my spine. This is what's taken me years to find out, but all the stuff I've been through I won't get into right now. But anyway, a birth defect in the very bottom vertebrae in my spine.
That can be painful.
A quarter of that vertebrae is missing. It is absent. So for 30-some years, along my spine, muscles formed and grew in places they shouldn't be to make up for that lack of support in the base of my spine.
Mm-hmm.
They started gripping nerves connected to my stomach, to my intestines, to my back, to my legs, everything. At one point, when I was just a little over 30 years old, I had the first of three physical breakdowns, complete paralysis almost, for days. And each time this has happened, it has taken me weeks and months to recover and to recuperate and to get control of my body.
Have you had any operations around this?
I have not. I have four brothers, and three of them have had back operations. I've watched what they've gone through. I'm not ready to do that yet. The diagnosis from the medical organizations isn't clear enough for me to even contemplate any kind of operation. I feel I'm healing it. I feel it took 30-some years to acquire. If it takes 10 or 15 or 20 to get rid of, I think that's a better choice than allowing them to cut me up.
Are you going to have a doctor who, you may have heard, Ed, so you couldn't get Dr. Micaria to come down. But what about a doctor who would simply testify to the fact that you have such a condition?
Yes, well, that is happening. There is a doctor coming into the court that I've been seeing for a while, and he is going to testify. He doesn't know about the marijuana thing. I never really discussed it too much with him because I didn't want to jeopardize his situation. He's not one of these people that are willing to put their credentials on the line for anything. He's coming in there to talk about my condition, and that is it. There's a lot of people. One thing these people got to understand is there's a lot of people in my life, from doctors to people on the street to patients who need marijuana, who will not come forward because of their situations, because they're afraid of coming out of the closet, because they don't want repercussions from coming in the courtroom and speaking the truth.
Now, can you give the number again which people can call to offer you support?
Yes.
Either financial, moral, or, in terms of work support?
That's the Marijuana Defense Fund. We have a phone number that is 408-457-0908.
Okay.
And for those computer buffs out there, I have an email address, which is robbie@cruzio.com.
R-O-B-B-I-E. R-O-B-B-I-E.
@cruzio.com.
Okay, and the phone number again?
408-457-0908. The Marijuana Defense Fund actually has a home page being developed on the internet. If there's any people out there who are good at HTML and creating the home page, we could use that kind of help right now because it's coming a little slow. But money will help, physical support, just letters, anything that anybody can do. It's time to step up and speak the truth. And I feel like I'm... And it's funny because we're asking to pack the courtroom right now. Free Radio Berkeley is doing the same thing up in Oakland, asking people to come and pack the courtroom. It seems to me that in the 90s, in the later 90s, that's going to be where a lot of the changes take place.
I think courtroom fashions will become important for future clothes designers.
Yes, you're correct. That is what I see happening.
That hemp clothing can be used to pack the courtroom.
Hemp clothing, that's right. I want someone to dress me in all hemp clothes to go into the courtroom.
Maybe someone could come dressed as a marijuana bud.
There you go, man. Who knows what's going to happen? I know that the spirit is with this, and if it's not now, then this is just one more step. We're not too concerned about the results of this trial. We're just concerned about speaking the truth.
Well, I want you to give us a call after the trial. In fact, on Friday, if you want to give us an update, that would be great.
Yes, I will do that.
Although you'd probably be in the courtroom. We may not be able to reach you.
Yes.
But also, for those who want to know, again, this is we're talking a trial tomorrow at 2, demonstration at 8 o'clock
8
tomorrow in the morning at the county courthouse.
That's right.
You know, bring your friends, bring your media friends particularly. And I want to thank you. Wish you luck, Robbie. You know, it's a lone struggle, but you're not completely alone.
I realize that, and I thank you very much for doing what you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Peace.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. The call-in number for Brimstone Barbara River Woman and everybody else is 427-3772. Brimstone Barbara, as you may know, is an ongoing worker with Save Our Shelters, the River Street Refugees, essentially to establish campgrounds for people in Santa Cruz who don't have the means to sleep indoors and who are, in fact, under the shadow of the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban. Ordinance 6.36.010, the law that makes it criminal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night. In the studio with me, slipping into a co-host seat, is a battling Bob LaMonica, my sometime successor on Friday afternoons, who gives his own shot at shaking up the county during his show. And Bob is here to kind of give us a brief update about what happened to him in the last few days, what's happening with the recall, and well, Bob, you give us the story.
Well, the reason why I'm here specifically is to get Robert Norse's signature on the notice of intention to recall Art Danner. The 96 Danner recall will be filed and served, hopefully on the 18th, which is this Thursday, and that gives Mr. Danner 7 days to respond. So hopefully we'll have petitions on the street by the end of the month. We'll certainly be active and in force. What I see happening across the board is this evasion of local issues, right? And I'm going to bring up a situation, and I don't speak comfortably about this situation particularly, because I've held this particular individual in some degree of esteem. But this individual likes to blow hot air about himself in regards to national issues, international issues, national figures. But when you get right down to it, those same kinds of values being applied here locally, this individual, not only as far as I'm concerned, cowers, but expresses violence and outrage at merely being asked, what do you think? So some people don't like to be put in a position where they're confronted, where they're challenged with their own posturing. Okay, and I had a situation that happened, there were witnesses to this, last night, in fact, as we were getting the notice of intention organized, which is we're looking at right now here in the studio, mm-hmm. and coming out of Kinko's, downtown Santa Cruz, and lo and behold, there is Neil Coonerty right now.
Neil Coonerty, you may know, is the Bookshop Santa Cruz owner, a former mayor and city council member, and also one of the authors or certainly major supporters of the downtown ordinances, the anti-homeless laws that make it illegal to sit down in front of shops, make it illegal to ask for a dime after dark, make it illegal to have a table on the street after dark gathering funds or petition signatures for that matter. So Neil Coonerty was a man who wanted to limit political activity in Santa Cruz, who wanted to limit visibility of homeless people and behaviors of homeless people that he considered to be inappropriate, and did. He was on the city council who got these laws passed. I called for a boycott of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, which I continue to call for, by the way, and this is not to say you should patronize Crown Books. Hey, Crown, out of town, that's what I say. But on the other hand, Neil has not really responded to homeless issues other than to, in my mind, back legislation to suppress homeless rights and also ban homeless activists like myself, like Kim Argula, like, there are about 5 or 10 others from his bookshop. That suppression, that banning, resulted in Marty Wenhoff, the supervisors, having to move her Monday morning orientation sessions from the bookshop because Coonerty would not allow us in to public meetings there. But anyway, you met Neil yesterday in front of Kinko's, and I guess you presented him with this petition, which...
Well, no, that's what I did. Yeah, I'm with Pierre, and Neil Coonerty has known Pierre for many years.
Pierre's a friend of yours.
And I asked Mr. Coonerty, what do you think about the recall? And he says, I don't generally support things that I don't think are going to succeed. And I said, well, you know, with your support, we have a much greater chance of success. And he says, well, I think he ought to finish his term and then let's replace him with a strong candidate. Now, I've heard that line over and over again. And let me give you a real quick application of that line. Richard Nixon, it was proved, covered up a burglary. Now, therefore, Mr. Richard Nixon, the President of the United States, should have been allowed to finish his term. And the bottom line reality is that this situation with Art Danner, this corrupt public official, has got to be dealt with.
Hi, we're on Free Radio Santa Cruz with Bob LaMonica and Robert Norris.
Well, just to finish the story here.
Be on radio with Bob LaMonica.
Just to finish the story. So, I said that. I said, well, then Mr. Nixon should have been allowed to finish his term. And Neil Kennedy walks away. And I said, you're walking away from me. I'm not walking away from you. Because to me, this is all about engaging in dialogue. What do you think? And when you get right down to it, Art Danner should have been ousted 8.5 years ago. The victim of his drunken car wreck was blood tested, and he was not. To get more close to the current situation, Art Danner directed time cards to be falsified. Now, I'm not making anything up. I'm not twisting any facts. This is a reality. We're talking about a five-term DA. So, as Mr. Coonerty's walking away, I says, you're walking away from me. I'm not walking away from you. He comes back to me, snaps his fingers in my face, and gets within 3 inches of my face, and yells at me for at least a minute. And like I said, I've got witnesses to this. I don't even know what the guy said, right? He's yelling at me at the top of his lungs for a minute, right? And he walks away, and I said something that I'm sorry for. I didn't say it in any high tone of voice, but I figure in the context of the situation, what I said, and I called him a blank coward.
As a fucking coward?
Right. Okay.
This is
now,
Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I to some degree apologize for that, and I put it in context. I was very meek and mild. And as far as I'm concerned, Neil Kennedy, who likes to posture himself as being Mr. Progressive, Mr. Liberal, case in point, Neil Kennedy, when it gets right down to applying values on a local basis, cowers.
Well, I think that's really a problem, Bob, with a lot of local progressive politicians.
Absolutely.
And I really commend you on bringing it up. Neil has also got a very short fuse. I found this in street dialogue with him. He starts shouting rather quickly, and he gets rather abusive personally and goes into your personal history and also doesn't mind spreading stories about you and so forth. I think, to be fair, we should invite Neil on the air, and indeed, if anyone who knows Neil is listening to this broadcast, I encourage you to have him give a call at 427-3772. Be happy to have him rebut or give his point of view on this issue. I've never closed the airways off to my critics, and I encourage them to give a call. And I encourage you to give a call if you're a critic or a supporter. Bob, I'm going to kind of move along quickly, so anything you want to conclude with?
One last thing, and that is that, hey, somebody disagrees with the political position of somebody else. Well, that's all very fine and wonderful. But it's no excuse to display violence. Neil Kennedy likes to consider himself, I suppose, a leader in the community, right? Visible, progressive, liberal, all this kind of stuff. Well, as far as I'm concerned, when it gets right down to it, Neil Kennedy is nothing. He's nowhere. And that display, whether I like it or not, is a part of reality.
You know, I'm going to suggest something, Bob, you might find interesting. I don't know if you would agree to this. I don't have the number of the Bookshop Santa Cruz handy, but if you can get that number, I would be happy to call Neil on the air and invite him to talk with you and have the kind of exchange that you hoped to have yesterday that apparently degenerated into an angry shouting match, at least on his side. I guess he said you also got upset at him and he shouted at you for about a minute.
I never raised my voice, and I think the point is this, is that in Neil Kennedy's case, at least, these guys, these people, do not like to be pointed out to be hypocrites.
So would you be averse to such a dialogue on the air?
No, not at all. I would welcome it. Okay. I would welcome Mr. Kennedy's responses. And here's the thing, too. If Mr. Kennedy had the courage to do such an action, it would, by its very nature, produce a significant publicity for the issue. I think that's the fear. What these guys want is they want to suppress it. They want to write it off.
What you're talking about is the recall.
That's right. Not only the recall, but the effort to remove the DA from office. The fact of the matter is that this year, this issue is not going to go away. Neil Kennedy and all the other posturing politicians in Santa Cruz are going to have to deal with it, whether they like it or not.
Well, during the next segment, Bob, I invite you to dig up that number, and we can give Neil a call and see if he's up to discuss this matter on the air. Until that happens, however, I'm going to be playing you a little bit of a segment from a tape by best in the business Becky Johnson, telecaster, spoiler of the DA recall, and ongoing fighting determined mom. This is from an interview. I hope I have the right interview on here. Let's see if I do.
I'm on a line to Becky Johnson, who's a community activist, a member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and a telecaster, actually, with her own new show, The Living Room. I believe you have a new show coming up on community
TV. Yes, it's in the works. It's a free speech forum talk show that will be, we're hoping to air on February 1st.
And you actually have done this just in time, because apparently your old boss has again unceremoniously dumped you, right?
Yes, the beloved Charlie Reed has removed me as host, and...
In his program, Community Perspectives, which airs on Tuesday at 6, as I remember.
That's correct.
Channel 71.
Yeah.
And this, actually, you're not the first host to go. You're kind of one in a sequence, right?
The third host he has driven off one way or another.
He's really going through his hosts, I guess, huh?
Well, Joe Grossman resigned.
Right.
Janelle was fired, although there's a big article, a letter to the editor in the Metro that came out yesterday where he claimed she quit.
You mean Charlie Gray, her boss, claims this?
Charlie Reed,
I'm sorry.
That she left the program voluntarily.
Uh-huh.
However, you can call Janelle herself and she'll say, he fired me.
I see.
Yes. And now I got removed from host because I called him a liar, according to him.
Uh-huh.
Actually, what I did is I said, he told me that Janelle had left the program voluntarily. I told him, I said, well, that's not what Janelle says. She says you fired her.
Uh-huh.
I said, somebody's lying.
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, who do you think is lying? And I said, well, Charlie, I think it's you.
I see.
So then, now I'm gone as host because I called him a liar.
Uh-huh.
Is according to the way he put it.
Sensitive guy, this fellow. People have called me a liar before. I don't fire them. Of course, then again, I don't hire them either. So let me ask you this.
Sure.
You have also been involved in the Citizens Committee for the Homeless in a number of capacities. You're one of the few board members, the only one, in fact, that I know of, that has spoken up in favor of an open-air shelter campground, which might somehow replace the one that has been closed by the Citizens Committee precipitously in violation of promises made to the campers in late November, and in fact ending sanctuary against the city's sleeping ban, the law that makes it illegal for people to sleep outside after 11 o'clock at night in the city on Verons, which criminalizes about, oh, I don't know, I would say 500 to 1,500 people. I can never quite clear how many that is, but certainly a substantial number.
That's all correct.
That's my understanding of it. I'm glad you agree with that. You actually were the first board member that I have ever heard who spoke up about that issue at the last board meeting.
I said that when the Armory opened in early December, that only 15 people chose to go to the Armory.
Mm-hmm.
So at the point where they had the option of being at the open-air shelter or the Armory, 15 people elected to go, and leaving probably 180 or so people at the campground.
Of course, critics would say, oh, this is so they can all do their drugs, get drunk, and hang around and play with their dogs. What would your response be to this?
Well, that's just more homeless bashing. The homeless community is a combination of many, many different types and peoples and situations, including some alcoholics and drug addicts. But then there are alcoholics and drug addicts in the homed population as well.
Mm-hmm. So the Citizens Committee reappeared, Tuesday afternoon at City Council, requesting funding.
Real comment there.
For a slip of the tongue. I don't wish to show my bias.
You don't want to get a reputation for being biased.
Certainly not. But I do have a viewpoint on it. Nonetheless, Citizens Committee representatives Daryl Dodgem Darling, as some writers have called him, the head of Community House, and pardonnez-moi, Paul Merceau, who's the head of the open-air shelter, was the man who took the bull by the horns and locked the gates and drove everybody out off of the shelter and essentially broke the word that he and Daryl campers on November 29th. They would not do that without negotiating, and in fact, they claimed they were going to allow them 10 days after permits for Community House Trailer Project were granted. That's the project that they want to supplant the open-air shelter, and that I believe your Citizens Committee for the Homeless has kind of lockstep agreed with them. They just wanted, they're going to put down these 10 trailers that will serve 45 people in a so-called for a sober, clean and sober program, even though this would mean essentially an end to open-air shelter for 200. And it also would mean, well, I understand this program isn't even funded yet. Have you gotten any new indications of what's going on with this million-dollar project?
As far as I can tell, it's pretty much up in the air still.
Well, apparently the city council agrees that it's not too clear what's happening, because and it kind of surprised me. I wasn't there, but I heard that what the council did was they put it off for 2 weeks. They didn't give the money, the $47,000 that the Community House potentates were looking for, and instead they put it off. And I understand that another group, campers of New Brighton Beach, who now style themselves the River Street Refugees, had been calling themselves Save Our Shelters, headed by campers and spoken for by Barbara Riverwoman and Sherry Connable, put in a request for some $27,000. I believe you were at that meeting, were you not?
I was at part of that meeting, the earlier portion.
Yeah, that was I, of course.
I did hear Barbara Riverwoman make that formal request to the city council. I completely support her. I think that the open-air shelter is an important concept to put in the citizens' minds in light of the fact that we do not have a legal place for homeless people to sleep, other than the Armory and the ISSP. And anyone who's been following this realizes that the Armory and the ISSP have severe limitations on serving the entire homeless population. And of course, then the fact that, you know, if you ask homeless people what kind of services they want and need, they say, you know, many of them say they want a campground. Some of those issues that you raised earlier regarding behaviors of homeless people that, you know, lawless manner, say alcohol or drug use, as a campground where people are